Blog Talk Radio.
In 3 minutes?
Which floor?
Oh, check the hall for the
Now, how did that happen? That happened because it's Christmas Eve, I'm telling you!
I'm not crazy. It's Christmas Eve. It's the one night of the year when we all act a little nicer, we smile a little easier, we share a little more. For a couple of hours out of the whole year, we are the people that we always hoped we would be. It's a miracle. It's really a sort of a miracle, because it happens every Christmas Eve. And if you waste that miracle, you're going to burn for it. I know what I'm talking about. You have to do something. You have to take a chance. You do have to get involved. There are people that are having trouble making their miracle happen. There are people that don't have enough to eat. There are people that are cold. You can go out and say hello to these people. You can take an old blanket out of the closet and say, here. You can make them a sandwich and say, oh, by the way, here.
I get it now. And if you give,
then it can happen. Then the miracle can happen to you. It's not just the poor and the hungry. It's everybody who's got to have this miracle. And it can happen tonight for all of you. If you believe in this spirit thing, the miracle will happen, and then you'll want it to happen again tomorrow. You won't be one of these bastards that says Christmas is once a year and it's a fraud. It's not. It can happen every day. You've just got to want that feeling. And if you like it and you want it, you'll get greedy for it. You'll want it every day of your life, and it can happen to you. I believe in it now. I believe it's going to happen to me now. I'm ready for it. It's great. It's a good feeling. It's really better than I felt in a long time.
I'm ready.
Have a Merry Christmas, everybody. Did I forget something, big man?
God bless
Lumpy, no. Oh, I like boning a marlin. Clear the whole world clear. And they lived happily ever after.
Welcome to the night before the night before Christmas on LNP Radio's In Our Craft or Sullen Art. I'm Richard Weissman. I'm the host, and I've got Neutron Bomb, my co-host, and I see we've got someone on hold. Let's see if it's Neutron. Let me bring them on.
Hey there.
Hey,
Merry Christmas.
Hey, there you are. Merry Christmas, Neutron. How are you doing?
Much better now.
Good, yeah.
Yeah. It's actually Christmas Eve here as well. So, yeah, thankfully it wasn't as bad as I thought it was.
Good. Yeah, Christmas Eve, because it's the international dateline.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well,
so, because the fun will commence with the family bickering very soon.
See, this is the advantage of growing up Jewish, is that I never had that. So, yeah. So only when I married Pam A. that I ended up in the whole Christmas muddle. But nevertheless. And how are you feeling right now? Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. Yeah. It's
good.
Interesting not having kids in our family, like home. When you come to your other family's home and there's kids, I don't know how people concentrate around kids.
I know. I love kids, and I love saying goodbye to them and having them go home with their parents.
That's it.
So, yeah, that's the joy of being an uncle, or nowadays a great uncle. So I'll stick with that.
That's awesome.
So yeah.
Do you have any callers as yet, or is it the two amigos?
I do. I do see that we've got someone on hold. Let me bring them online. 703, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you very much. I haven't been on the air for a while. How are you doing tonight?
Good. Welcome,
hey,
Thomas. Welcome to the night before the night before Christmas, but for Neutron, it's Christmas Eve.
Yeah. Every time I start dealing in timelines, all I can think of is the people on who are on, I think it's Fiji, who are right by the international dateline, and they love
that.
And they love that because it makes no sense to them, but they'll be on one island and have Christmas one day, row over to another island that's on the other side of the dateline and have Christmas again, and they think that's wonderful.
That's awesome.
I'm dead serious. I thought that was almost as great as the cargo cult, you know?
Yeah. The magic of man's imagining, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, you create things like an international timeline, and it really leads to a great deal of magical thinking, you know that.
It does. It does. Well, we're so glad that you could join us on the air here. And I don't know, did you guys happen to hear Bill Murray bring in Christmas?
No, I missed that.
Okay.
I heard it was quite good.
Isn't it? Yes, it's a great kind of alternative because it has that bah humbug Christmas, excuse me, I'm fighting a cough. Christmas is humbug throughout much of the movie, and it's Bill Murray, so it's a comedy, and it's really funny. And then it has the sappy ending, which is what I played for our intro. So you get a little bit of both, and it's a nice
I saw that. That was years ago when I saw that movie, though.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of our favorites. Yeah, we like that.
I'm
like
a sucker
Bad Santa.
For sappy endings, though. I cry at movies with no problem whatsoever.
So it takes a lot to make me cry. It takes a lot to make me cry, but I will say It's a Wonderful Life, the ending, does make me cry.
Yeah, well, funny. I have a harder time finding movies that really make me laugh than I find. I cry at every sappy movie. You know, give me a little kid finding his dad. I'm in tears all over the place, but. Most humor I guess I'm too cynical.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if you've seen Bad Santa. Have you?
What's that?
Have you seen the movie Bad Santa?
Sad Santa. No, I don't think I've seen that one yet. My wife and I have
Bad Santa. Yeah.
We have this tradition of watching bad romantic Christmas movies from Thanksgiving until Christmas, one a night.
Yeah.
And we constantly try to determine what's the worst. And Christmas Elf is the most god-awful movie we've seen yet, you know.
Oh, yeah, there's some bad Christmas movies out there. But, yeah, but Bad Santa is really, it's not family viewing, but it is very funny. It wins me over every year. It's my favorite of the Christmas comedies. With Scrooge, the Bill Murray movie. Oh, yeah, it's great. It's Billy Bob Thornton. Yeah, so... All right, so I know we've got some poetry, and let me just make sure we don't have anyone else on hold. So far, we don't. So, Neutron, what do you think? Where do we go first?
Well, I've got Tom's poem up first. So, Tom,
right.
When you're ready.
Okay. Yeah, this is me perhaps at my most cynically humorous worst. The day that Santa died. All revolution, by its nature, is insidious. The day Santa, the despot in red, was overthrown is no different from any other. The plot began when the elves needed relief. It deepened when the reindeer soured on their feed. It was proclaimed when educators could show that Christmas bred addiction to presents and snow. The straw that broke open Santa's sack was when it became obvious that mistletoe was being used by dirty old men to get kisses without having, when children had been put to bed and sugar addiction ran through their heads, that tinsel had been woven to tie up the fat clown, the chimney wire to signal when he was coming down. The call went out and the holy began to shout, it's time to teach people what Christmas is all about. Now, after much time had passed and snow is a myth of the past, the tears of rain are known by the name, the fall of dreams and children's pain. End poem.
Wow, what a great way to open our Christmas celebration. So it obviously has all of the beats of a traditional Christmas poem and therefore of a traditional, you know, old-time Christmas film. And yet you turn it all on its head. It has that realism that speaks truth to commerce and commercialism and makes us examine where we've taken the holiday. And very well done, Tom. Great.
At the
great
same
open.
Time, I don't let off all those people who try to pretend that they know the true meaning of Christmas off the hook either.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. So very well done. And Neutron, your thoughts on this one?
I thought it was a great place to start the podcast tonight, especially after my family are just, the dogs are going crazy. Sorry about that. So I thought it was perhaps more gritty than, as you mentioned, or cynical than what I'm used to reading from you, Tom. But I think it also acted as a timely reminder that Christmas is more than presents and mistletoe for dirty old men, but to remember the spirit of Christmas and of giving and of service. So it was very well done.
Well, I love Christmas, by the way. I'm one of those people who, since I was a little kid, planning presents and trying to figure out the right things to give people and being caught up in that miserable quest called the perfect present, which took me years to realize didn't exist. And I have five younger brothers and sisters, so I had to plan it all, you know. But I grew up with a mother who, until I was 12 years old, didn't put up any Christmas tree or any Christmas tree ornaments until we'd all gone to bed on Christmas Eve, and we woke up, and the entire house had been turned into Christmas Wonderland.
That sounds spectacular.
Yeah, I don't know how she did it.
Absolutely.
I really don't.
A lot of work.
But she was dedicated to the idea, and so I guess I kind of absorbed that kind of thinking from her, you know, that it's all wondrous and magical and about family and presence and giving and happiness. And it doesn't have to, you know, be anything exotic. Because, I mean, you know, I've been through some years where I've been downright pretty poor. And all I could give was all my friends' snickerdoodles. And my friends who still know me from that time period, all they want any Christmas is snickerdoodles. I make good cookies.
Nice. Now, I know that we've got Pam. Let me bring her on. Hi, Pam. Merry Christmas.
Hi, Richard. Merry Christmas. Hi, Neutron. And Tom, Merry Christmas to all of you and to everyone
Merry
out there.
Christmas.
Happy the holidays.
Thanks,
so glad
you
can join us.
Happy to
now,
be here.
Pam, did you have a chance? Absolutely. Did you have a chance to read Tom's poem or hear Tom's poem?
I did. This was actually one
Great.
I had heard the other day. And it was worth hearing again. Wonderful reading. I really like what you both had to say. I like, Richard, where you mentioned that he turned the traditional holiday theme on its head, because he really did with this poem. And the main message that I got from this was the idea of hypocrisy and mob mentality, especially when it comes to holidays. So just a really clever write and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment, Pam. So nice to have you on the show again. And I guess with that, we'll move on to our next one, Neutron, whenever you're ready.
Okay, so I will get Manuel's poem up now. And I'll give this one a read. So it's called Do Not Forget the Children. Boys engaged in Santa's warehouse, getting boxed and wrapped, all ready to go. One gift goes to each good child, but not all good children get one gift. Some children in war-torn countries or in refugee camps or under tarps neath bridges receive none at all. Still, old Santa tries, but he tries too hard that he has no time for them, not anymore. So it may fall unto us to remember the children, remember the innocents, and bring them hope. Maybe it's time we become the faceless Santa and bring them smiles, if only for a while. End poem.
Great read, Neutron. So if we could start with you, Tom, what'd you think of it?
I wholeheartedly support the thinking behind this, but it's one of the reasons why I love Toys for Tots and all the efforts to make sure that there's presents and stuff like that for people who don't have any money and for whom Christmas is generally going to be pretty miserable. And we remember them and find ways to give them a chance for laughter and joy. You can't go wrong.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, look, I think the message in this poem is so poignant this time of year. And it was really quite a touching poem. And as Tom mentioned, I've also decided to pay it forward this year. And get more involved in the homeless and living rough charities in my area this year, and it's thanks to some altruistic and inspirational people in my life. And I think poems like this provide inspiration to those who are thinking about helping others. And I don't know, something I've noticed is that you know, you you have good intentions, and but you also get a reward, a personal reward for helping out other people as well that are struggling. And Santa could always use a helping hand. My favorite part was, maybe it's time we become the faceless Santa and bring them smiles, if only for a while. And it's a very inspiring poem.
Absolutely. Great comment. Yeah, I too thought it was a great, speaking of truth to power, refugees, homeless children. The poem spotlights the forgotten ones, asks us to remember and to give. Always a great message at this time of the year. And Pam, your thoughts?
I really like this. I have to agree with Neutron. It's an inspiring poem, and that end stanza is especially beautiful. But I like it all the way through, and especially where she reminds us in the third stanza that there are children out there in war-torn countries and refugee camps who don't get any gift at all. And I like that she brings Santa in here in the spirit of Christmas and giving, with the idea that, you know, he tries all he can, but you know what, maybe we need to step up and do our, so absolutely a beautiful, heartfelt write and very well done.
Great comment. Okay, and with that one, I'm turning it back to you, Neutron, for our next piece.
Thanks, Richard. So, Pam, I got your poem up next, so when you want to give it a read, it'd be greatly appreciated.
Sure. Absolutely. And I wrote to the quote from It's a Wonderful Life, "Dear George, remember, no man is a failure who has friends. Thanks for the wings. Love, Clarence." And this is "Thank You for the Wings." And it goes like this. "Thank you for the wings I have. They've given me new flight to see beyond and below the stars within the night. Thank you for my time on earth. I learned of friends and love. Thank you for all you've done that helped me rise above. We both had much to learn, and we learned it from each other. Bumbling through challenges, we both became like brothers. Sometimes, though eyes are open, we can't see with our hearts. But eventually, we understand a quilt is made of parts. We both found what we needed, an extended family. We both found the courage to be what we should be. That moment on the bridge when time and fate did change. Sometimes miracles are simple. Sometimes they're grand and strange." End poem.
Wonderful write. Wonderful read. I love that you took on Capra's classic. It's still one of Hollywood's greatest lines, and brings tears to my eyes every year. And you've captured that Capra spirit and heart in your poem. You know, cynics in Hollywood call it Capricorn, but the fact that that he's able to pull on our heartstrings year after year is extraordinary. It's an extraordinary gift that he gave to us. And you really did capture that vibe. I thought it was a great ad for our show, right on the mark, and very well done.
Thank you.
And absolutely. Thank you for writing it. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, I was very impressed with this heartfelt poem. There was a lot of wisdom to it. I was immediately drawn to sometimes, though eyes are open, we can't see with our hearts, but eventually we understand a quilt is made of parts. And this is so very true. Personally, I'm a firm believer in the principle that it takes a tribe to operate as a whole, and that it is very difficult to thrive as a one. And I think we as a human race were meant to be part of a community. The rhyming was a nice touch, and it gave the poem a really wholesome Christmas vibe, which I enjoyed immensely. The end two lines, though, pulled at the heartstrings, and I'm hoping for Christmas miracles, big and small. Very well done.
Thank you, Neutron.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was a really great point, too, Neutron, was rhyming poems, for some reason, they just seem to fit that classic Christmas vibe, and it was a nice touch, nice ad. And Tom, I'll give you the final word.
You know, there's two movies that always that have always spoke to me as classic Christmas movies. It's A Wonderful Life and Miracle on 31st Street. And I think you captured a whole lot of that magic, particularly in that last verse, which with the charming rhyme, the simple meter, make it even stronger and less sappy. The moment on the bridge when time and fate did change, but I love these last two lines. Sometimes miracles are simple. Sometimes they're grand and strange. I think sometimes also the biggest thing for all of us is being willing to let our hearts open up to accept them when they occur. And that's probably what's so great about both those films is that they touch people, even the cynical ones who try really hard to pretend they don't feel those things. And when they hear them, try to deny them in every way, which just makes it more obvious that they've been touched far more than they want to admit. It's a wonderful
Absolutely.
Job.
Absolutely. Thank you, Tom.
Absolutely. Great comment, Tom. Okay, Neutron, I see you have our next one up.
Yeah, so Tom, if you could give, I'll just check, is there a SoundCloud for this one?
I don't have a SoundCloud for this one. I think Frank originally had ideas of coming on board, but you know, the evening of the 23rd, people are getting ready for Christmas. They got a lot of commitments, so I think that plans
sure.
changed. And he private messaged me that he wasn't going to be able to make it.
Okay,
so.
Well, Tom, if you could give this one. Actually, Richard, you
to.
Haven't read yet, have you?
Not yet.
I'd love to read Frank's stuff.
Okay, Tom, you go ahead and read it, and then Richard, I'll get your poem up too.
Okay.
That
spirit of Christmas. Once upon a time in the kingdom of the never-ending dreams existed from that magical realm of fantasy and imagination, the surreptitious place of the mystical spirit of Christmas, where time was always the season of wintry merrymaking. A place where the myriad of dreams of children turn into reality, where the setting of the vanilla, snow, and bomb pop crystals of ice with the slurpy trees and the lofty hills of peppermint sticks as elves ride through the snow, Conedale in gingerbread sleighs. A forgotten world where the orphans and misfits dwell, where eternal nights are long and eclipsing days are short, and the twinkling stars are harbingers of Christmas Eve, steering the nose of the most shiniest of all the reindeers. Children hold the spirit of Christmas within their hearts. From their belief, the illustrated animation of dreams are created. The wonderful invention of the token of the aspirations of millions. A celestial beacon of inspiration for the awaited arrival of Santa Claus. End poem.
Great read, Tom. Thanks so much. And, Pam, if we can start with you.
Well, I really enjoy this. This has a beautiful flow to it. Even though it's not a rhyming poem, it has a kind of a sense of meter and a real classic feel to it. I think a lot of it's due to some of the wonderful alliteration, such as steering the nose of the most shiniest of all reindeer. And I like how this reminds us that there is that spirit of Christmas, that mystical spirit, that magic that especially comes through in the spirit, in the hearts of children. I like the phrase, and the twinkling stars are harbingers of Christmas Eve. And the end line, the celestial beacon of inspiration for the awaited arrival of Santa Claus. Just absolutely a delightful rite that's just filled with spirit, and it's very well done.
Absolutely, great comment. Yeah, I too thought it was a wonderful poetic take on the Santa Claus film, and that closing stanza was especially magical. Children hold the spirit of Christmas within their hearts, and their beliefs, the illustrative animation of dreams are created, the wonderful invention of the token of the aspirations of millions, a celestial beacon of inspiration for the awaited arrival of Santa Claus. That's a great ad for the Hollywood Christmas show. Very well done. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, look, I was really impressed with this. I thought it was a magical poem, and it did capture that spirit of Christmas, and it was a very well-expressed answer to the prompt. Above that, it reminds me of when my sister's kids were quite young and they were experiencing their first Christmas. And it was just the first time, I think, since being a young kid myself, a young whippersnapper, that I really did get to experience that magic and that joy of Christmas. And that's what this poem reminds me of. Is you don't always get those days back, so just appreciate them as they come.
Absolutely. And Tom, as reader, I'll give you final word on this one.
I love this kind of magical thinking of creating a universe, a wonderful world that holds the spirit of Christmas so that it can be enlightened and enlivened. Though it also reminds me of the Christmas where it was funny. The present I gave my son, it lasted for several years, was the night that the Christmas Eve after he'd gone to bed and we put everything under the tree. I got this sudden idea and I was still playing with my computer and learning how to do things. And I put a picture of Santa Claus on the back of a page and typed up a whole letter directly to my son about, how wonderful he was, and signed it Santa Claus and put that under the tree along with everything else. And he thought the letter was incredible. It was so great. And we went to my father-in-law's after Christmas morning, and he announced to my father-in-law and my father-in-law's girlfriend that he knew Christmas for real, and it was for real, and so was Santa Claus. And they went, well, why? And he goes, because I have a letter, and it's signed by Santa Claus. And he just thought that was the hottest thing in life. And the imagination and the joy of children that Frank does such a beautiful job of bringing forward in this is in itself something so magical that when we let it really express itself, sometimes we are far more gifted than we realize.
Absolutely. And with that, I'm going to bring it back to you, Neutron.
Okay, Richard, so I'm going to get you to read your poem next.
Ah, okay. So there's a story behind this one, which is that I created a bunch of prompts like I always do, but I didn't really know where I was going to go with it. And so I looked over at the prompts I created, and I realized that I had a poem in the Bad Santa quote. And the quote is, I hope that you got my present and that there wasn't too much blood on it, which out of context doesn't make much sense. And I liked that I could kind of run with it in a different direction, and so I did. So it's called Blood on the Present. the red flowered till it soaked, then stained the Brazilian cherry wood box I rough hewed. Now it creaks open. Musk curls north to nostrils. Dead rose petals crinkle like time yellowed paper. We peer past old iron clanging cymbals, whisper no, 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 lost in this foggy winter's eve, fumbling for gold keys, as weary bell tower clocks inch ever onward. I hope that you got my present, that my blood didn't ruin it. Chinese lanterns light dank alleyways while Santa carols off key. I know this city by touch. As ascending subway steam warms cold souls, the Magi brought gold and myrrh to Mary, and I hope that our blood didn't ruin it. Old tattered wall calendar proclaims Christmas time again, as we kiss neath cyberspace mistletoe, ever entranced by Hollywood's green glowing pixel dust, unwrapping invisible presents and hoping SAG blood from central casting won't ruin it. End of poem.
And Richard, let's get you some comments. So Tom, would you like to start, please?
I will admit, when I was a Boy Scout and carved neck slides out of wood, I managed to cut myself when I was making one of an American Indian, and he became very deep red and beautifully stained. Everybody thought it was tremendously lovely, and I never bothered to tell them that it was me bleeding all over it. Sharp knives. And that opening, that's the first thing I thought of is like that you were chiseling it or carving it with carving tools and sliced your fingers. And there's actually, for me, kind of in a sense, a loveliness about that, because we sacrifice ourselves when we craft in a way, because we pour so much of ourselves into the craft we create. And that's perhaps why those are such deeply meaningful gifts when you give them, because there's so much of you in the ones you give. And I like how you shifted in the next to last verse the meaning and the import of the message of Christmas so that it becomes something larger than just yourself and larger than just the gift that you've given, even though that holds so much meaning, and speak to the ways in which we've become enchanted with our own enchantments. And I just thought it was, for all of this sort of, what do I want to say, not a cynicism, but sort of a standing back to a certain extent and looking at yourself and sort of wondering for a moment if perhaps you haven't gotten too caught up in your own wonder. There's a certain magic in this poem that I find quite delightful.
Thanks, Tom. And by the way, I'll just jump in to say that that's exactly what happens in the movie, is that he's carving a present, out of wood, and he cuts himself. So you caught that spot on. That's exactly what happens in the movie. And then he says that line, I hope there wasn't too much blood on my present that I gave you.
That's awesome. I totally forgot that part of the movie. And Pam, what were your thoughts?
Well, I never got the opportunity actually to see the movie Bad Santa, but I did like that quote, and I like what you got from it with the right. I particularly like, as you got to the part, lost in this foggy winter's eve, fumbling for gold keys as weary bell towers clocks inch ever onward. There's something very just haunting and just about the passing of time in that weary bell tower and the idea of trying to find those gold keys. And I liked how you bring us into the city, a place that's just kind of worn down, a place that is filled with blood and a loss of hope. And you remind us that Magi brought gold and myrrh to Mary. And then how Christmas has changed so much and it's become all about the competition of who can make the best movie. You know, that cyberspace mistletoe, that pixel dust that enchants us. And we have our favorite movies, but it makes me think on how oftentimes what the people like and what the critics like are often not the same movie. So very well done here, Richard. I enjoyed it.
Thanks, Pam.
And I'm going to have final word on this. I think you painted like a visceral, dark image of the holiday season in some respects. I'm just having a look. Where is this part? Chinese lanterns light dank alleyways while Santa carols off-key. I know this city by touch as ascending subway steam warms cold souls. I really enjoyed that word picture that you created there. And I think the comments from both Pam and Tom were very astute. The only thing I will add is I think it's an important rite, and Christmas is not a great time of year for everyone, and it can increase feelings of loneliness in those that may or may not have the support of friends or family. And I think it was a great answer to the prompt, and it certainly was in the same tone, if not better, as the original prompt from the movie, Bad Santa. Very well done.
Thanks, Neutron.
And,
okay, so, yeah, where do we go next?
All right, let's have a look what I've got on my board here. We've got a poem by Gary Rubin. And, Pam, if you could give this one a read, that would be greatly appreciated.
I'd be happy to do that. This is Christmas Zenith by Gary Rubin, and it goes like this. Hushed silence interrupted by a howling wind, tree lights flickering, a colorized Turner TV classic, once mourned, now embraced reminiscences, Casper the friendly ghosts of Christmases past. Dogs once were gifted crowned ribeye bones, grandparents once set the standard traditions, shadows of friends once gathered at the tree, all now glimmering tree ornaments, gravestone markers annually revisited. Palpable magic in the pre-dawn air, suspended nothingness, a zenith, no gifts to wrap or unwrap, no preparations nor cleanups, neither over nor underindulged, relaxed and seated at an emotional summit. Those hologram ornaments flickering, twinkled stars, radiant warmth, classic 16mm film ends. A trailing ribbon of cellulose rotates, tick, 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 flapping the reel at its end. As I too will one day be laid to rest, an embalmed ornament hung proudly displayed in memoriam, annually enshrined on future trees. End poem.
Wow, great read, Pam. I love this write. First, as a film buff, I appreciated that opening salvo of Gary's against colorization of the Capra classic. God bless him, Turner has the right to do whatever he wants to things that he purchases, but I just can't imagine why anyone would prefer colorization of a black and white film. But nevertheless, you know, I don't want to go too deep into my own personal preferences, but I like that he took a shot at that. And then I love the use of physical film as a metaphor for the reels of our lives. I thought it was unique, highly intelligent writing that avoided sappiness at all the turns, which is tough to do when dealing with the Capra class. It's just a great write. Very well done. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, look, I think it was quite a forlorn write to start off with. It did avoid that the schmaltziness, I think, that you were referring to. But for me, it reminded me of letting go of loved ones lost. But I think it was important to note that there was a sense of hope in the poem as well, and I appreciate that. And it would be remiss to forget that, the cycle of life and gaining small pleasures in a movie that ticks over as we do in life. And I thought it was a very poignant poem, and I was also drawn to the last stanza there, particularly a classic 16mm film ends, a trailing ribbon of cellulose rotates, tick being the reel at its end. Very well done.
Absolutely. Great insight. And Tom, your thoughts?
You know, there's in this, I hear, in a sense, future shock. Because we start with a classic film and how it may be modernized by colorization, and then that becomes the metaphor for how our own lives become caught on celluloid, where before, I know many who dreamed of being memorialized in song. Even Shakespeare in the drunken scenes with Falstaff speaks to, you know, how our lives will be remembered and what will be counted as important or not important. And he catches a whole lot of that sense of the way things change and yet the way things remain the same, and how traditions have meaning and yet at the same time lose meaning. I was really impressed at the scope and the depth and the innate understanding that is captured without having to be spoken to in this piece. So that when you get to that last stanza, you are almost given a chance to sigh yourself, to perhaps pull your coat a little closer, to look over at a loved one and go, all that matters is that I've got them there with me, and think about
great
the fact
comment.
That's a hell of a poem. That's one hell of a poem.
Absolutely. Great comment. Great insight. You guys are on fire tonight. And Pam, as reader, I'm going to give you final word.
Yeah, I really like what both Neutron and Tom had to say. I like the title, the phrase Christmas Zenith, almost as if, you know, being at the pinnacle of the best part of Christmas. I like that he reminds us the way the holidays have changed, how there was a higher standard of spending time with family and spending time with tradition. And nowadays it's all, you know, about those hologram ornaments flickering, whatever sparkly that catches your eye. And I too like how, as you mentioned, there's kind of this idea of the symbolism for the ending of life with the flipping of the end of the reel. He captures a wonderful Christmas spirit, but as was mentioned, without being too much like cotton candy and nougat. Really a clever write, thoughtful and intelligent and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment, Pam. Okay, with that, I'm turning it back to you, Neutron.
Okay, so I'm going to give Pam Ait's poem a read. And it's written to the prompt, "I never thought it was a bad little tree. It's not bad at all, really. Maybe it just needs a little love. Bad little tree. Yep, maybe that's me. Can't hold a star. Probably won't get too far. Just a bad little tree. Too short for garland, too thin for wreath. I must be good for something. I've been planted upon this earth, the land where nothing goes to waste, even though decay begins at birth. Just a little tree. I'm not good, but I'm not bad. I'm just a little tree, not happy, not sad. I have what I have and no more to give. I cherish every morsel of every precious second that I live. I may not be much to look at, nothing much to see. If you would be so kind to take me home, wrap my essence in blanketed warm, I promise to you from the bottom of my roots to be the best Christmas tree that I can be. Winter's come, Christmas, like a storm, is long gone. Cards and greetings stop, but you and I, side by side, will grow. Yes, throughout the coming years, you and I shall never again be all alone." End poem.
Wow. So I have to say that this one, I read it. I try and read all of the poems for the show beforehand. And I loved it the first read. And when I heard you read it aloud, Neutron, it hit me on an even deeper level. So for those that don't know, Pam Ait is actually my wife of 26 years now. And I felt the love on a very subjective and personal level that second read through. And I loved it the first time I read it. And I thought it was a layered poem of esteem, hope, giving, caring, and love, a unique mix of humility and self-acceptance. Her tree's potential is realized through being loved and loving. And it was heartwarming. And even on the first read, I did feel it, but even more so the second time around. And Tom, your thoughts?
Well, I have to agree with you in a whole lot of ways. I found myself just thinking about the fact that when my parents, who were organic gardeners and all, the Rodale things, and I still keep a compost heap because I grew up always with one by whatever house we lived in. And my mother fell in love with the idea once we were all starting to get, you know, into upper grade school and high school and stuff. With six kids, we cover a lot of time. That it was all live trees. And you'd go out, plant them, and you could go to the house and count them and tell how many years we'd been there. And she had one with the Douglas fir. And we left that house, and it ended up being in the newspaper because it had grown so big and tall that the streetlights, when they fell on it, made it look like the perfect Christmas tree. And people would come from all around to see it. And it was in the Ledger Star down there in Norfolk and Virginia Beach. And I went back, and, you know, and I show it to various people. And I went back once, and I haven't been back since. Because the guy who bought the house, the third person to live in it after we left, cut the tree down because he didn't like all the people driving up to look at it. Haven't been back since. But somehow she catches the beauty of something as wonderful as a tree growing and starting off so small that it's perfect from the very start, even when no one can see it. And I think that's beautiful.
Thank you so much, Tom. Great comment. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought this was a touching piece of poetry, and it's a sentiment I can totally get behind. You know, you can be happy with your lot in life, but I think everyone on some level is looking for love and acceptance, not just romantic love, but it could be platonic love, it could be
the love of your family, just generally a connection to humankind or to the planet in this case. And I love where Pam went with the prompt.
Great comment, great insight. And Pam, your thoughts?
This is absolutely a beautiful, heartfelt write. You know, it's a perfect one for Pam, a quote for her to write to, because she's oftentimes showing her heart in her poetry. I have to agree with you that this is layered. I like that it's about learning to love and accept yourself, but learning to do it while walking next to another person so that there's this sense of a strong partnership, a sense of support, of not being alone. And I really like this all the way through. But I especially like, I cherish every morsel of such precious seconds that I live. I may not be much to look at, nothing much to see. And then, you know, it's just that whole idea of really, like I said, learning to love yourself. So just a beautiful write and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. And Neutron, turning it back to you for our next one.
All right. Well, I'm going to take a bit of a punt on who I'm getting to read this next one. But Richard, if you could read Budho's Towards the Night poem, it would be greatly appreciated.
Okay. So this is by Budho. It's called Twas the Night. Twas the night before Christmas. And throughout the Death Star, no Imperial soldier moved. They feared inciting Sir Darth. The stocks of laser rifles were polished to a T. Otherwise, the crew knew, banished for eternity. The officers were holed up in compartments by twos, a shake in their jammies, awaiting more unsettling news. And the Lord of Darkness brayed awash in his evil, barking fire and brimstone and madness medieval. When out on the tarmac of Shipping Bay 3 came a Hoboken ship that passed force-sealed with ease. It landed with a hop and dead stop in its lane as soldiers, bewildered, shouted, wailed, and complained. The moon of Endor hid in plain view as haphazard guests piled out doing the old soft shoe. Drunk as skunks, and wearing holiday garb of red and white uniforms, they sang holiday barbs. Darth was incensed and brushed past the crowd, shouting Darth orders and shouting darned loud. But the holiday spirit had taken a foothold, and the crew of the Death Star stood proud and stood bold. They defied the Dark One with commanding force. They shoved him a TIE and sent him off course. Then they proceeded to join the growing festivities with joy in their hearts to proclaim these proclivities. That the spirit of Christmas was alive and well, even in the darkest, bleakest corners of hell. Whether space or stolen planet be a habitat of thee, happy holidays to all, and please, please, be merry. End of poem.
Excellent read, Richard.
Sorry, I muted myself. Sorry about that. Tom, Tom, if we could start comments with you.
Oh, I love this. It's such a wonderful take on The Night Before Christmas. He really captured the spirit of what it was all about, and his ability to take it and where is that last one? The spirit of Christmas was alive and well, even the darkest, bleakest corners of hell. That was just so beautiful and so thoroughly captured the entire spirit of everything. And the humor that was wound through this poem was so apropos to the spirit of Christmas, even as he made wonderful and delightful games out of all the things we have grown up with from Star Wars. I just thought this was brilliant.
Absolutely. Great comment, Tom. And Pam, your thoughts?
I enjoyed this all the way through. I like that he took a classic Christmas poem and turned it on its head, mixed it in with so many wonderful Star Wars references. I thought this had great humor to it. And this was just downright enjoyable all the way through. So very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Neutron, what'd you think?
Well, firstly, I have to say, I feel like I should have been prepared with a Yoda meme after reading this classic Christmas night tale turned interplanetary, right? I enjoy the tongue-in-cheek humor, and the spirit of Christmas is strong in this one. If I was better at doing a Yoda accent, I would have done it, but it's abominable, let's put it that way. But my favorite part was they defied the Dark One with commanding force, shoved him in a TIE, and sent him off course. Then they proceeded to join the growing festivities with joy in their hearts to proclaim these proclivities. Great poem.
Absolutely. Great comment. You know, the wonderful thing about all poetry and LNP is that you get to read these, and that's one of the beautiful things about poetry is that you can revisit these old friends. And I had the good fortune of reading this one a year ago, and it had a different lens on it then, I think, because Trump was still in the White House, and it had that Darth Vader is as Trump feel to me, and it hit a kind of Jonathan Swiftian satire note. And then reading it again this year, it was totally different. You know, here he's putting it in for our Hollywood Does Christmas night, and boy, does it fit, you know? I mean, the Star Wars is just, it's in the Hollywood pantheon. And the fact that he's taken it and given it a Christmas beat just works so well. It's fun, it's funny, and I thought it was a perfect ad for our night of Hollywood Does Christmas. So, great job, Budo. And with that, I'm turning it back to you, Neutron, and I see you've put our poem on the board.
Yeah, so it's Eric Svensson's poem, and there should be a SoundCloud.
And there is, so that's nice. We can all rest our voices and get some hot liquid. Let me pull it up.
Cats have nine lives, honky-tonky bars, hookah pipes, but no mistletoe. Oh, Santa, giddy up shooting stars, man. Be a good sport. Be brave. You and Rudolph are immune to this insipid pandemic virus because your ho, ho, ho and Rudolph's adorable red nose is part of faith. Stealth bombers, you guys fly above this niggly, nasty COVID cretin. We're all booting common sense aside this Christmas to welcome you and yours back into our hearts. Never mind our analytical, optical, elliptical heads with constant hyperbole. Get thee out of the North Pole nunnery. Lift that red dress skirt. Kick those hooves high, Rudolph. Get your asses right, yeah, in time for Christmas. Honky-tonky bars, hook-up pipes, and maybe just a sliver of hope. Had enough of one night in Bangkok and feeling the devil walking beside me. Played all the roles in Cats, tired of belting out memories. Not even to mention all those coyote ugly tequila Sheila moments. Bette Midler, she knows about Santa and Rudolph, 'cause she checks us all out from a distance. Unlike Nat King Cole that gets up close and personal with roasting chestnuts and wishing us all a Merry Christmas, rest his beautiful soul. But George Michael taught us a few decades ago that we've got to have faith. Wonder if he loved Christmas pudding and pie. I know cornered little Jack Horner loved curds and Wade and wasn't an arachnophobe. Honky-tonky bars, hookah pipes, and darn well barrels of hope. Still don't get it? Let's see. Not sure if this is going to be a smart simile, overt oxymoron, or ellipse eclipse. Let's call it a creative geodgrunt moment. You're one of those guys up there with your fingers on the trigger. Any moment, you've got to release the atom bombs on Hiroshima or Nagasaki. But by mystical, magical Santa and Rudolph intervention, history as we thought we knew it gets rewritten. Common sense chooses to believe that nuclear warfare will eventually bring about worldwide pandemics that will kill all of us anyway. Doesn't faith in action release all self-destructive triggers? End poem.
Wow. Thank you, Eric, for the SoundCloud. Once again, he gifts us a tour de force muralistic word painting, and this time Christmas tropes dance with viral winds and other face-testing realities. I thought this was just a great take on the prompt, faith is believing in things when common sense tells you not to, from Miracle on 34th Street. Just an amazing write. Very well done. And Neutron, your thoughts?
You know, I was drawn to this section here. Honky-tonk bars, hooker pipes, and maybe just a sliver of hope. Had enough of one night in Bangkok and feeling the devil walking beside me, played all the roles in Cats, tired of belting out memories. Bloody brilliant phrasing. It reminds me of the renditions of Memories during the performance of Cats I saw in Sydney. And personally, when it got to the fourth time, I was praying for self-destructive triggers. I love the touch of the sardonic in this poem, well, maybe more than the touch. And it was a true ride of the time with the references to the pandemic. And I really enjoyed the tongue-in-cheek humor, too. Very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. Yeah, spot on. And Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, this had so much clever phrasing all the way through, and I have to agree, it had wonderful tongue-in-cheek humor. I too, really liked that part where it said, not even to mention all those coyote ugly tequila Sheila moments. Bette Midler, she knows about Sand and Rudolph because she checks us all out from a distance. You know, there's this real idea to me of how people will just stay safe the rest of the year, but willingly gather around and hug complete strangers if it's the holidays. I am a clever ending. So many great lines. As always, he's got little nice touches of alliteration. I always like how he's putting in, like, singers and other, like, cultural references from throughout history, like Nat King Cole, George Michael. Wonderful lines and very well done.
Absolutely, yeah. We're going to have a tough time judging this one. And with that, I am turning it back to you, Neutron, for our next piece.
Okay, so our next one is a SoundCloud by Martha Gettle.
Okay, let me put that up. All right. So, got it.
Christmas Adventures by Martha Gettle. Maxine, who everyone called Max for short, was in her room because Christmas made her out of sorts. She never knew what to get for everyone, and trying to figure it out was no fun. So she got in a fight with her cousin Eric and had been sent upstairs to think about it. She'd fallen asleep without even going down to eat. This Christmas stuff had her that beat. Next morning, in the flurry to catch the train, everyone completely forgot to call her name. So Max woke up and went downstairs. She found that there was no one there. Her family had so much on their mind that they had left Max behind. She got out the telescope for Christmas that they got her. In the neighborhood, there was something to see for sure. So she began to look around the neighborhood. She saw things that didn't look good. There were people out there she did not recognize. If they weren't up to no good, she'd be surprised. So she watched them. She began to see things they were doing looked shifty. They were doing the same thing every day, looking over the neighborhood the very same way. She decided to see what was going on, so she snuck in the back of the van while they were gone. They were ropes and climbing tackle, but they were Max. That really raised her hackles. She stayed up that night and watched the land below. With the telescope, she had the perfect view, you know. One night, she watched them sneak into a home. One of the neighbors she knew was gone. She called the cops as soon as the action she spied, but of course they were gone before the cops arrived. The next night, she watched them burglar three homes. They were stealing her neighbor's stuff while they were gone. Then she noticed them eyeing her house as she peeked around the window quiet as a mouse. But she could see they were next on the list. She knew somehow she had to fix this. So she set some traps all around, determined to bring the burglars down. The first of the door took hold of the knob, but it was heated up like a branding rod. The burglar jumped, screaming, slid downstairs, and broke his head. "Stop clowning around," the other burglar said. The next burglar tried to come in the back way, but the frozen honey made it impossible on the steps to stay. She laughed as he went head over ass and landed up in the frozen grass. The next one tried to climb in the window, but she had sprinkled broken glass, you know. He tumbled out the window onto his ass, hands covered with broken glass. She watched them leave that night, smiling because she'd won the fight. She called the cops and filled them in, so they'd be there when the burglar struck again. When the burglars arrived for their criminal date, they found the cops lying in wait. The next morning, the door burst open wide, and her mom and dad stepped inside. They hugged her and said, "We were so worried about you. We had to come home. There was nothing else we could do." That evening, when they tucked her in for the night, I asked her if being home alone gave her a fright. She just smiled and said, no, not at all. In fact, I had a ball. End poem.
Thank you for the SoundCloud, Martha. That was just great. I loved the couplets, first of all, and then just a nice riffing off of Home Alone, which is definitely a modern Christmas classic movie. It has all the beats of the movie in this poem, and I like how Martha changed the gender of the protagonist from male to female. That was a nice touch as well. Great job, Martha. Very well done. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, look, this was a really interesting take on the Home Alone prompt. And I used to watch this often as a kid, and it always confused me as to how they could forget their youngest child. And this next part made me smile. That evening when they tucked her in for the night, they asked her if being home alone gave her a fright. She just smiled and said, no, not at all. In fact, I had a ball. And I think watching that movie as a kid, I would have had the same feeling. I would have had a ball too. Very well done.
Great comment. And Pam, your thoughts?
Well, I had to laugh when Neutron said, you know, like, how could they forget their child? Because, yeah, you just wonder. But then again, you know, I don't know. I mean, one time my parents left me because I was reading a book in Walmart, and they came back and said, we lived like close to an hour, like over an hour from the nearest Walmart. And they drove home and came back and said, hey, we forgot you. So, and I never noticed. But what I really liked, I liked too, as you said, the couplets here. They were nicely written. I like that you made the protagonist a girl. I thought that was a nice twist. I also liked that she went with the nickname Max, the name Maxine, and the nickname Max, because the name Max always makes me think of Where the Wild Things Are, with the boy Max. Mm. And I think that character fits really well with the concept of the character of the child from Home Alone. So I don't know if she did that on purpose or it just worked out that way, but that's the thought that came to my mind. And so really just excellent write and very well done.
Absolutely great insight. And with that, we're turning it back to you, Neutron, for the next one.
Thanks, Richard. I've got Grey Eyes poem up next. And, Richard, if you could give it a read, that'd be greatly appreciated.
Sure. So this is called A Christmas Story. A Christmas Story, for me, never gets old. I still howl at the tongue frozen to a post so cold. I too shared that fate, so painfully I could relate. The little boy bundled into a snowsuit till the walk got was akin to a robot, another relatable memory for me. A furnace on the perpetual mend, repaired by a father whose swear jar I'd like to spend. The trials and tribulations of a bullied little boy, who only wanted for Christmas his dream toy, yet finally gives a smackdown on his bullied ploy. The Christmas turkeys that became dogs' dinners as they marauded the house every bit the winners. The pièce de résistance was the father's contest prize, a lady's leg lamp, fishnet stockings wearing a heel. Sadly for us all, it was mysteriously shattered beyond repair. All the while, mothers and teachers alike speak to wisdom of protecting the tight. You'll shoot your eye out. see the dream toy for this little boy, a brand new Red Ryder BB gun. Oh, my world. So much fun. Then on Christmas morn, after all the wrappers were torn, no gun was found. You could hear Ralphie's whimpering sound. Then when all hope seemed lost and the dreams were tossed, the old man spoke up and said there was one last present hit. Hopes were so high he blew his lid. There was his gun and the happiest hit. End of poem. Okay, so if we could start with Pam, what'd you think?
Oh, I enjoyed this one. I have to say this was one he had written for one of my shows a couple years back, and then he brought it out this week on either Saturday or Monday. And after the show, I messaged him and I said, hey, I gave him the link to your contest. I'm like, you know, you should put this in here because it would fit with Richard's show so perfectly. And, you know, I have to say, like, I like the way he captures the highlights of the A Christmas Story, which is also one of my all-time favorites. And you can really, I like that he uses the word howl. Like, A Christmas Story for me never gets old. I still howl at the tongue frozen to a pulse so cold. I, too, shared that fate so painfully I could relate. It's so funny to me that there are movies like that where you can just relate because they're, and I think the thing with this one is it captures a kind of simple time, that innocence, that, you know, there's no overly complex storyline in A Christmas Story. It's just downright relatable. You know, we look back and we understand what it's like to be that kid that wants that one special gift. And you know what? Let's all just take a few seconds to ooh and ah over how absolutely adorable Baby Gray Eyes was with his BB gun at the bottom of the poem. That is so cute.
Yeah.
And just a wonderful
absolutely.
Write and very well done.
Absolutely. You know, I thought that was him, and I figured you guys, one of you knew the backstory, so there it is. And Neutron, what do you think?
I thought it was fantastic. So for me, the reminiscent qualities were palpable, and we all have a Christmas story, whether you're spiritual or not, and I really feel this captured a Christmas story in fine fashion. And although we are an ocean apart, basically me and the whole LMP team, it brought to memory my Christmas stories, and for that I'm forever thankful to Gray. I think my favorite part, the part that I audibly giggled to, lucky I was on mute, was the pièce de résistance, was the father's contest prize, a lady's leg lamp fishnet stocking wearing a heel. Sadly for us all, it was mysteriously shattered beyond repair. I wonder if his mother had anything to do with that.
Absolutely great. Great comment.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I love this one. I think that Gray nailed A Christmas Story with rhymes that touched the movie's beat and simultaneously showed us how this story touched him personally. And it was just a great, great poem. And I'm glad you guys could, that Pam, that you could confirm that this was, in fact, Gray. Quite a photo. I think it added the whole personal touch to this write. Great job. And with that, let's move on to our next one.
All right. So, Pam, if you could read T. Parry 898's poem, The Snowman.
Absolutely. I'd be happy to. This is The Snowman by T. Parry 898, and it goes like this. There's so many I could mention, each one thoroughly deserved, wrapped in love and sweet intentions and a host of pretty words. Some have special Christmas melodies and happiness abound, but for me this one's so special and is utterly profound. no Blockbuster at the movies. Ours was simply more homespun. We first viewed it with our children when they both were very young. In the comfortable surroundings of our lovely suite of old, we were cuddled up together and it snowed and snowed and snowed. Our concerns a simple story, Snow Arrived on Christmas Eve, was a feat of animation that nobody could believe. When a boy whose name escapes me crafted with his frozen hands an enormous happy miracle, they christened the snowman. Our young hero went to bed and found he couldn't really sleep. As the clock chimed 12, he paused, and then he took a little peep. By a miracle, the snowman, he was suddenly alive, and the boy then took him by the hand and ushered him inside. There then followed several vignettes as the snowman did explore Christmas lights and decorations that he stumbled on indoors. After dressing up and dancing, they both tiptoed through the snow, then climbed aboard a motorbike. You should have seen them go. The final climax followed quickly when they flew across the sky, taking in the English landmarks as they slowly drifted by. While the music was so beautiful and way beyond compare, we were lost inside the fantasy and walking in the air. Next, there followed Father Christmas and the annual Snowman Ball. There was music and more dancing, and a present, I recall. Arriving safe and sound back home, they waved their last goodbye, then an ending that was sadder than I'm able to describe. Seems the snowman's heart had melted and the boy was all alone. Now this message is more poignant and now cuts me to the bone. It reminds me of my daughter who's now sadly passed away and stirs in me tearful memories of our golden yesterdays. End poem.
Wow, great read, Pam. I love this personal take on the Christmas film, The Snowman. Compelling rhymes throughout. The ending was incredibly poignant and powerful. Just an amazing job. That final stanza. Seems the snowman's heart had melted and the boy was all alone. Now this message is more poignant and now cuts me to the bone. It reminds me of my daughter who's now sadly passed away and stirs in me tearful memories of our golden yesterday. Wow, what an ending. Great job. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, look, I was a little bit saddened by the poem, like just especially in that last stanza the first time I read it, but just hearing Pam read it, it brought a tear to my eye. And it was a really sweetly written homage to Christmas memories, past and present. And my condolences to T. Parry for his daughter passing. And just a special note to them, may you always remember her fondly at Christmas and always hold her close to your heart. And I think it's always harder at Christmas, the loss of a loved one. And that last stanza hit me like a ton of bricks with the snowman's melted heart. Very well done.
Absolutely. And as reader, Pam, I'll give you final word.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, this one is absolutely beautiful. As always, wonderful rhyme and flow. I like that he has that personal touch in. It was actually because I knew how this one was going to end, I started tearing up before I got there. Because it really hits you hard, the loss that's felt. But I like that he looks back, and I like that he chose a lesser-known Christmas movie, and that he reminds us that there's, like, nowadays there's just too much TV being watched. It used to be, you know, like back when I was a kid, that there were just special days or special times of the year that family gathered and watched certain shows together. And that's the time that he takes us back to, a time when family would gather together and have a favorite movie that touched all their hearts. And so, yes, just a beautiful and emotive write and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And with that, I'm bringing it back to you, Neutron.
Thanks, Richard. I decided it's time to pull out
pull out a poem for your show. So I'll give mine a read.
Awesome.
And it's called In Our Hearts. Urns of ashes in a row, waiting for commemoration. In a humble chapel, simple single glazed windows devoid of stained glass lit the core. A cracked vessel that beats to the underbelly of King's Cross adorns the lavender painted walls. And week-old bread from the kitchen is doled out as Eucharist. Communal meals served in an open-air arena, nestled amongst ibis as dense as a flock of sheep. COVID-safe plans in place to protect. Water crackles and boils in the gas-warmed coffee urns to serve those sleeping rough on the streets and couches of inner Sydney. Warm their cockles with radiant smiles. Toiletries, art kits, water bottles and bags collected for the streeties and their families. Stand a baby, hurry down the chimney tonight. And bless those who've passed in the year of lockdown, digging pockmarked holes in our hearts and poem.
Great read. So before we get into our comments, I, if you will, I'd like to take a moment and ask you what your thoughts were in terms of the original prompt and where you went with this. I'm going to kind of put you on the spot.
Certainly. So the prompt was, strange, isn't it? Each man's life touches so many other lives. When he isn't around, he leaves an awful hole, doesn't he? And this year I've been following a couple of homeless and living rough charities in Sydney. And one of their leaders, who's been heavily involved in the homeless community, he was still living rough on the streets, but he was manning multiple charities to help people. And there was an email that went around, and it was just saying, look, you know, all of these people have touched the communities in which they've lived. They may not have much in the way of possessions, but what they don't have in possessions, they make up for in heart. And, it was just, that was probably where I came from, the fact that you can't take your possessions with you, so don't accumulate them to the point where they control your life. And that's something that I've been trying to work on this year. And I thought paying homage to the people on our streets and our leaders of the community was the way to go with this poem.
Absolutely. Yeah, see, I had a sneaking suspicion, and I loved where you went with the prompt, spotlighting those sleeping rough on the street. The examination of each man's life touches so many other lives. It was spot on, and yet completely without Capra's sappiness or sentimentality. I thought this is a wonderful Christmas poem and a brilliant take on the prom. Very well done. And Pam, your thoughts?
Oh, I really enjoyed this. This was just absolutely amazing in the way that it reminds us of learning how to love and to give from the heart. Even when we don't have a whole lot, we can still give. And I really I like this all the way through, but I like a crackle vessel that beats to the underbelly of King's Cross adorns the lavender painted walls, and weak old bread from the kitchen is dolled out at Eucharist. Just a wonderful imagery there. And I like how you capture the idea of families who are blessed, if even just for a short time, by somebody digging in into their hearts, into their pocketbooks, into whatever they have, and just giving. You know, just a beautiful write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam and Richard.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, great comment, Pam. Great ad. Go ahead, Neutron. I'm bringing it back to you.
Okay, cool. All right. Sorry. It's just so hard when you don't have a face to look at to know when someone's about to talk. So you just end up all going,
So next we've got a poem by Jazz Karan. And Richard, if you could give this one a read, that'd be greatly appreciated.
Absolutely. I will do that. And I have to say, it is a genius thing that we do with this show, because radio in the real world, they are looking at each other as they're talking, so there's none of that. Okay, let's do Jazz Karan's poem. So this one's called It's a Beautiful Life. My feeble heart beats alive with springtime's essence. Pearls shining in crystal clear water, green leaves kissed with you, tangerine dances on child's sweaty palm, hovering gray clouds unfold, blanketing the night with cherry blossoms blooming from my torn skin, softly flaking in the rotten tree I plowed, now exhaling an earthly smell, turning the hard night into a serene lullaby. Then one day I knocked on death's door, knowing exactly what I was looking for. Thousand flares blazing my flesh, waiting for the black cloud. That day, an evening glow showed. I caught a feather blown through the air. It fell from an angel's wing, stopped the world that passed by, touching the heart, so. End of poem. And that was inspired by It's a Beautiful Life. And what'd you think of it, Neutron?
You know what? I'm going to have to admit, I'm not sure if I've seen It's a Beautiful Life, and I think I'm going to have to watch it this Christmas, because it sounds like it's touched so many people's lives. And like this poem in particular, I think, is both beautiful and bleak at the same time, and death is an unshakable force in the world at the moment, especially with the pandemic, and there's little we can do to stop it. But within that last stanza, there is a glimmer of hope through the clouds, a touch on the spiritual. And my favorite stanza, though, for its power and description, was hovering gray clouds unfold, blanketing the night with cherry blossoms blooming from my torn skin, softly flaking from the rotten tree I plowed, now exhaling an earthly smell, turning the horrid night into a serene lullaby. Just amazing.
Absolutely. And I actually did a Google search while you were commenting, and it's either Life is Beautiful, the 1997 film, which is this wild film about how this Jewish waiter keeps his son's mind occupied and positive during the Nazi occupation in the concentration camps, or it's a Wonderful Life. So I'm really not sure where it was, because it could kind of be either one.
I agree with you.
So it's interesting.
Yeah, I agree. It could be either. Yeah.
Right? It's kind of cool that it kind of works with either film. So, so really interesting. And I thought it was very aesthetically pleasing, the poem. He always has compelling lyricism as part of his, you know, trademark style. And I thought this was just a wonderful write. Very, very well done. And let's go ahead and move on to our next one if we can.
All right, so I'll just cue that. Won't be a moment. So next we have a poem by Pink Fairy 5, and I'll give this one a read. And it's called A Christmas Story is My Favorite Christmas Movie. A big blue-eyed Ralphie Parker coveted a Red Ryder air rifle so that he can defend himself against Scott Farkas. That would be a feat. Beautiful Betty Boop lamp in the window with the fringe skirt, you know, that is probably going to cause car wrecks up and down the street. The yelling and screaming of the wild next-door neighborhood children and their tongue-lolling hound dogs for no apparent good reason. Christmas spirit coming through loud and clear in spite of the hilarity of this show that I cannot wait to see each season. It all adds humor and fun to 1983's big hit, A Christmas Story. Randy Parker stuffed into his red snowsuit by a disheveled mummy and then saying he had to go leaves me in hilarity glory. I've shot my eye out, which should terrorize me as a parent, keeps me laughing in my recliner in case that is not apparent. Out of all the Christmas shows, Gene Shepherd's is my favorite one, maybe because when it came out, my children were this much fun. End poem.
Great read, Neutron. So, yeah, I love when this happens, when we have more than one poet taking their poetic on the same movie. Because you get to see how it's almost like, you know, that old cliche about the car accident and everyone's seeing it from a different angle, so they are seeing slightly different things. And I think that the fact that Grey Eyes took this movie and we had his take on it, and now we're getting Pink Fairy's take on it, it just shows you how magical movies are. And, you know, I love all art forms. I'm a sucker for painting and music and even dance. But when it comes to storytelling, I just love anything about storytelling. And movies are kind of like, you know, the pièce de résistance of storytelling, because you have the story being told with the dialogue, which you get like in, you know, in a play or in some kind of epic poetry as well, and to some lesser extent in novels. But you also have the cinematography, you have the music, and it all kind of comes together and gives us a different read on the whole thing. And that is the magic of movies. And I think that Pink Fairy gives us this, her take on why this movie is magical for her. I thought it was a wonderful personal take on the modern campy classic, A Christmas Story. I thought she did a great job with it. And I see that Pam has returned. Did you have a chance to hear A Christmas Story by Pink Fairy Five?
I did, yes, and I really enjoyed it. It's like you said, it's great to read about a movie that is somebody's favorite, and I like how she mentions that she didn't just watch it as a kid, she still continues to watch it as a grown-up. And I really like how in the instance she says, I've shot my eye out, which should terrorize me as a parent, keeps me laughing in my recliner. I thought it was also a really nice touch that she brought up the infamous leg lamp, because that was like one of the almost most hysterical parts of the movie, is the fact that the father decided they were going to have that horrific looking leg lamp right in their window. So excellent write and very well done.
Absolutely. And Neutron, as reader, I'll give you final words.
Certainly. Look, you know what? I'm going to admit this on air. I thought when I heard the original poem that that wasn't part of the movie. I thought that was part of Gray's story. So this actually was quite illuminating, because I'm like, wait, that couldn't have happened with two of our poets. So I absolutely love the reminiscent nature of this poem. And I think Pink Fairy has captured it through the lens of the Christmas movie. And hopefully, I'm pretty sure I've got it on good accounts that Pink Fairy 5 has a brood of grandkids. And I hope they're proving as much entertainment over the holiday season as her children in the 80s. This poem made me smile.
Great comment. Okay, and with that, I'm turning it back to you for our next poem. Are you on mute?
Yeah, sorry, I didn't realize I was on mute. So we've got Liquid Mind Forever up next. And Pam, if you could read this one.
I'll do my best. All right, let me get my eyes a little closer. Here we go. All right, this is Christmas on the Runway by Liquid Mind Forever. And it goes like this. In 1985, slim, full of myself, out on the dance floor in black sequin skirt and top, shaking a tail feather, a woman I had not met before approached me. I'm a dress designer. We're putting on a holiday show for Christmas at the Mosa Center in downtown St. Louis, and I would love for you to be my design model. My hair worn cropped and a hip buzz spiked in flaming red. This obviously had an effect on the designer's appeal for my look. This was my first runway show, yet, yes, I was excited and looking forward to being front and center with newspapers and other designers watching me. Surprisingly, when the night of the show arrived, I was feeling sick to my stomach. I thought I was developing the flu, but no, it wasn't the flu. I was scared to death. I wanted to call up my designer and tell her I was too sick to come. However, I knew that was not possible. Instead, I prayed, "Dear God, I am asking you to make me an instrument for your glory. Please grant me some task, some need when I arrive at the show that will occupy my mind and take me out of myself. Thank you. Amen." I dressed, got into my car, and faced the freezing cold outside and turbulent seas within. Upon entering the center, cameraman, stage crew, lighting crew were all puttering about, oblivious to me. I asked one of the men where the designers were. He motioned up the winding iron staircase off to my left. "Thank you," I said, looked up and climbed the first of my steps to high couture. Once upstairs, my designer sighted me. "Deborah, I need you to help me out," she said. "All the other models have no idea about choreography. Would you please show them how to move?" She pointed to a dark section of the loft area where I could see girls milling about like lost sheep. I thought, just what I asked. I walked over, introduced myself, and began seeing what they knew and what they needed. The girls were beautiful, blondes, brunettes, tall, slender, gorgeous. I showed them a few moves, gave them some needed confidence, and went back to my designer's station. This was the first time I saw my dress. I was shocked, had no idea what color or texture or style would be. It was heavy fabric, something like a tribal, richly woven, multi-textured wool blend in deep purples with woven French knots and reds, yellows, and muted other shades. The dress fit over the head with no buttons or zippers. The neck was cowl with much excess fabric. I was seated. The makeup artist began dressing my face and hair. Thing was eclectic, buzzing and popping with busyness and excitement. The announcement came over the speaker. 5 minutes. Take your place. House lights to dim. Completely consumed and taken out of myself, my fear had disappeared. The show began. We all lined up on the winding metal staircase and made our grand entrance from above as strobe lights lit our way. Standing at the top of the stairs, the last model to make her entrance, I said out loud, "God, let's boogie," and off I went to the limelight. With swing and bounce full of confidence, I almost glided down the stairs and onto the runway. Lights and music accompanied me. Letting go and completely being myself, I became like an apparition of spirit. I danced lots of flamboyant movements, and I stopped, legs hip-width apart. I flipped my head completely down, bent over to the knees as the cowl neck came up, and over my entire head just as quickly I flung it back and began the parade down the runway, making eye contact with the audience who were beaming. They applauded me and hooted. I owned the stage. After the Christmas show ended, all the models and designers walked down the iron stairs and exited. As I made my way down the stairs and into the assembled crowd, there was a burst of applause. Stunned, I suddenly became aware that people were waiting for me to congratulate me, to speak with me. What a night. From cold feet to the heat of success, I earned my place among the evening supernovas. I was granted my request, far more than I ever had been offered, to me, plus all to the glory of God's grace and goodness. My prayer had been answered, and answered that Christmas on the runway. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Yeah, that's a pretty long poem, too, so not an easy task, and you really rose to it. Thanks so much. I love this piece. I had read it a year ago, I think in our last Christmas that we did last year during Christmas week. And it matched quite well for the Miracle on 34th Street quote that we were asking for as one of the prompts, which is, hold on a second, something like, faith is believing in things when common sense tells you not to. And here Deborah tells the story of her stage fright, and she prays, and, you know, she has faith. Common sense tells her not to. And sure enough, you know, she's called onto the mat and asked to help out with the other models that don't know about the choreography. And she just tells a story so well. And it's a great Christmas story. And she paints that picture of the stage and how it all went down quite well. So very well done. And again, thanks so much. A great read. And your thoughts on it, Pam? Are you on mute, Pam?
Oh, I didn't. I'm sorry. I thought you said Neutron. I thought this was absolutely wonderful. I like how she reminds us that you can glorify a higher power and prayers can be answered. In settings other than, say, churches or whatever typical setting you would think of, that there in life we are given oftentimes opportunity to have prayer answered, to be a blessing to other people. And I like how she faces life and she faces the runway with a sense of flamboyance and sass. And I thought it was very well done.
Great comment. And with that, Neutron, I'm turning it back to you. I know we're getting kind of short on time.
Yeah, we have one more poem left.
Perfect.
And we're going to give this one a read, since that was a bit of an epic. I will give this one a read now, and it's called The Nine Lives of Christmas by Originals by Terry. All year I wait and long to see my favorite holiday movie. Sometimes It's a Wonderful Life, but often one Dark Santa's Wife. But lately, at the bottom line, Nine Lives of Christmas, really fine. A firefighter meets a girl, but he will not give her a whirl. He wants one special man to love who will fit her just like a glove. But there's a twist. In love they fell. There is humor and furry friends. I guess you know how this all ends. It's Christmas time. What can I say? All four went jingling on their way. End poem.
Great read, Neutron. Yeah, you know, now I need to see this Nine Lives of Christmas because I haven't seen it. I'm a sucker for romantic comedies, and I'm a sucker for Cats. I don't know if you guys sometimes hear in the background, but every once in a while, my cat, Bovie, will jump up onto my lap, and I'm sure she's in the background purring away. So I thought this had a great rhyming scheme and solid storytelling throughout, a great way to end our Christmas Hollywood night. And Pam, your thoughts?
I think cats are filled with personality, and so is this poem, which had a wonderful rhyme and flow. And I have to agree, it did inspire me to want to see that movie. I think it would be a great one to check out. So awesome write and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Neutron, I'm going to give you final word.
All right. I just have to say that both Terry and I have something in common, and that is watching Christmas movies at Christmas time. And I'm at my sister's place, and I think we've gone through the Christmas catalog of Netflix movies, and now we're moving on to the other streaming services. So very well done and very relatable.
Absolutely. Great comments. I thought this was a wonderful episode. I love movies. And when Phil asked for a Christmas theme, I figured this was a good way to go. And real happy that you guys were able to spend the night before Christmas here with us on the air. So I want to thank Tom, and of course, always thanks to Pam for joining us on these nights, and special thanks to Neutron, my co-host. Beyond all that, thanks to our poets on All Poetry, on Late Night Poets. Without you guys, there is no show. You come through every 2 weeks for us with your best, and this show was no exception. Just a spectacular featuring of poetry. In addition, you gave us some movies to check out, and there were a couple that I hadn't seen, so adding to my Christmas list of movies to watch for this holiday season. So thanks so much for that as well. Beyond all that, I want to thank Fill My Eyes with Poetry. Without you, there is no show. You're in the background making our SoundClouds happen and making sure everything goes smoothly. Merry Christmas to everyone. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Pam. What have we got coming up in a half an hour?
We have Into the Darkness, which will feature poetry inspired by Hans Christian Andersen's The Matchstick Girl.
That sounds really
amazing.
Cool. I looked it over, and I have to admit, I had never read that Hans Christian Andersen story. So I was like, "Whoa, this is really cool." It was a little late in the game for me to try and write a poem and get it to do justice to such a brilliant story. But I am real excited to hear it and to see what other poets have written for that. So please join Pam in half an hour, and should be a great show. In addition, tomorrow night is Fill My Eyes with Poetry, Letters to Santa. They do this every year. So join them tomorrow night, 10 p.m. Eastern. And I think there's a Christmas special for Saturday, right? It's all on the board. So please do join us. Keep it right here on Late Night Poets. Lots of good poetry coming up for Christmas time. We got 10 seconds left, so I'm just going to say Merry Christmas, guys. Thanks so much for joining.
Merry Christmas, Richard. Thank you. Thank you.